Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking about the Kingdom of God, which is a nation of people who do what God says. They're doers of the Word. They're doers because the Spirit of God dwelleth in them. And unfortunately, there are a lot of demons that dwell in people, or at least they can stick their heads in and out and whisper in the people's minds and hearts and keep them from looking at certain things. And those demons depend a great deal on your personal pride to keep you in check. That is your bit in your mouth, your own vanity. And so you cannot enter the kingdom without humility. And humility allows you to repent. It allows you to begin to have your mind changed by God. And what these demons are is they are weeds growing in the garden. Now, you know, we have a lot of things out there in nature we call weeds. You know, and we also have a term we call dumb animals. And I always tease people, you know, the definition of a dumb animal. And they say, no, what? And of course, I'm leading them into it. My strange, bizarre desert sense of humor is that a dumb animal is an animal that just outsmarted a man. Because every time I've seen people say, those dumb animals, it's just because the animal did something that the man didn't expect, and the animal got away with it, and the man was all upset, and so he calls the animal dumb. He just outsmarted you. I remember working for a fellow who cows had walked around a fence. His fences went out on a lake bed, a dry lake bed like the Dead Sea. And the fence just goes out and stops after a while. And the cows normally don't walk around it because they have to get out in the mud and the salt and the alkali. And they won't go around it. And you build the fence out when the lake is as low as possible. And you go out there and you build a mound and you pile up rocks. And you put a dead man in there so that you can hook the fence off. And then you stretch that fence out. Usually do it during the middle of winter when the ice is frozen and everything. And I've done it for people. And unfortunately, the lake got a little drier that year than normal. And the cows could actually walk out on this alkali white dust, keep going out, going out, going out. And eventually they just walked around the fence because it was still dry. And then they walked over to another fence and grazed and started grazing there. And then they walked over to a fence where he had stacked his hay within about 2 or 3 feet of the fence. And they reached across the fence and started pulling on the hay bales and eating the hay bales. Not because they needed it, but because they could. Cows are fiddlers. They like to fiddle with things. They can reach this. They know you put it out of their reach, but you didn't put it out of their reach. Now they could reach it. He was going to move the haystack. But he was gone, didn't see this happening. And eventually the bales fell down. And some of them fell on the fence. And the cows started walking up the bales and pulling more down. And they could just walk right up on the haystack, and they were ruining the hay and destroying it. And eventually he came along and he moved the cows away. And then he hired me to pitch that hay into trailers and trucks and move it where the cows couldn't get to it anymore. And it was all, the bales were all broken up. And we're out there in the hot, hot sun, the sweat just pouring off of us. And he keeps talking about those dumb animals. And they're over there in the shade, chewing their cud. And we're in the hot sun, working like a dog. And I said, for dumb animals, they sure got us working awful hard for them. And he didn't think it was funny, but I got a chuckle out of it. The fact is animals aren't dumb. They're actually pretty smart. They upset me, and I've called them dumb animals myself. But I've learned to talk to them a little bit more than I used to, and now they listen sometimes. But I find often lessons in the animals that they teach me about building a network of people. Because people are dumb animals too. They're always outsmarting the shepherd and going the wrong way. And, you know, it's a great temptation to take your staff over and just smack them one. What are you doing? This is crazy. This is going to be your destruction. You need to come together. You need to start caring about it and stick together. You starting your own herd? You know, I just saw an email from somebody who's kind of part of the network, but kind of not. They kind of want to mosey out, and they're good people. They want to mosey out and not really be a part, but then they don't really want to leave either. They're kind of always grazing on the outskirts of the network. They're so afraid that they'll be a part of something that might control them. And that I actually had that with a calf. I was moving cows from one field to another out there on foot. And the field they were going to was just full of lush green grass and fresh water. And the field they were leaving was pretty much out of grass. I mean, there was grass, but it was dried desert grass as they'd eaten most of the good stuff. And now it was time to go over to the field that had the nice green lush grass and lots of cover. And it's just a wonderful place. Well, it's the kingdom of heaven for cows and sheep. And so I was trying to move them over, and I called them, "Hey cow, hey cow." And cows half a mile away, three quarters of a mile away, started moving back. And you could see their dust coming this way. And they, "Hey cow, hey cow." And I didn't realize it, but some cows had split up and gone up on the mountain behind us. There's a place where they can get out of the fence, and they kind of mosey up there and were eating the really dry desert grasses that have a lot of protein in them, but they're way up there. And they kind of like that as a change of diet. And they were way up there, and they started coming. But I didn't even notice them because they were behind me. I thought they were all to the south. But they started coming, and calves started following. But there was one red cow that just laid in a pasture. I could see it way down there, kind of a desert pasture, and just laid there and chewing its cud. And unfortunately, it was the babysitter. See, cows designate a babysitter to watch the calves. And the babysitter will go gather with, you know, half a dozen or a dozen calves around it, and it will just stay with the calves. And then when the other cows come up, it'll go to water and go other places. And that's the babysitter. And they somehow or other, they elect that babysitter to kind of watch those calves and keep an eye on them. And they do a good job, but I was calling them to come up to go through the gate. And they didn't get up. And so anyway, I had to go down there. And the other cows were, you know, mostly through the gate. And I went down to get the other cow that was laying there. I could see her. And I knew I had to go walk around her because I was being a little bit smarter than her. And I walked around her, and then I said, "Get up!" And she got up, and she started moving. She's a horned cow. And I've had my ribs broken by a horned cow once that panicked. And so I'm a little cautious. And so anyway, she started moving up, and everything was okay. And the calves started moving along with her. But some of the calves were kind of spooky. This was unusual. You know, they're not even a year old. So they haven't seen all this moving them around by a man. So they weren't sure what was what. And there was one particular one that just kept wanting to run away. You know, run out to the east. And, you know, I had to go around a little bit and say, "No, get back with the other." And it would see the other cows were all moving up. And so it would go back over. And finally, I got them up to the gate. And then, you know, it's kind of a V shape there so that they're kind of in on two sides and trying to get them to go through. And there were cows that were already through. And one of the calves, big fat gray scimitar calf, tried to jump the fence instead of walk another 15 feet and go through the gate. It tried to jump the fence and it couldn't, and it bounced back and it spooked that one calf, and that one calf ran out. So I went out and around and got her to come back, but then it started thinking that this man, this upright creature, is trying to manipulate me. It's trying to get me to go somewhere. And I'm a free cow out here on the range, and I don't want to go where he wants me to go. Just because I was encouraging it. Maybe I pressed the issue a little bit. I mean, I wasn't within 100 feet of the calf. And the other cows were all gently going through the gate, but didn't want to go with the other calves. Didn't want to get, I saw this from the beginning, it didn't want to get close in with the other calves. Wanted to stay a little bit away to maintain its independence, because its independence was so important, more important than the herd. And so it didn't stick with the herd. You see, that's what you need, this gregarious nature in sheep and cows, if you're going to herd them on open range where they can be free. They have to have a gregarious instinct to care about others as much as they care about themselves. They have to care about the herd as much as they care about themselves. And so when danger comes around, they won't just run off. They will run to the herd. They don't run to the herd just for their own protection. They run to the herd because they care about the herd. They are part of the protection of the herd. They want to be there for the herd. There's danger. I got to go warn the herd. But no, this calf was thinking, there's danger. I got to save myself. And it kept panicking. It would come back and then it would kind of panic and run off. And I spent an hour trying to get that calf to stay with him. And then the cows had gone through the fence, and then there's another gate a couple hundred yards away. And they go through that. And then they start moseying down because they know where the pasture is. And when they start moseying down, now the calf looks through the two fences and sees the cows going south. So they want to go south, but they haven't gone through the gate yet. But if they go through the south, there's not a gate, a convenient gate there. And so then I knew what they were doing, so I circled around them and I opened up a gateway to the south. That's just inline fence. There's no corner. There's nothing to get them to change. And I know the problem is that when they get to that gate, they have to suddenly change directions, change their thinking. They're thinking going south. Now they have to change their direction and go west. And you have to convince them of that, and they don't speak English. No habla inglés. So when you say turn, they may not do this. Now with the cows, I can actually yell at the cows and say turn, and they will start to turn. I can communicate. But the calves, panic was so controlled in them. And most of the calves, there's about 8 of them now that were left, because the cow had gone through. They didn't follow the cow. They didn't follow the leader. They didn't follow the babysitter. And eventually the cows came back, some of them came back, and we got them through and all this stuff. And the bull was wandering way off too, and then finally we got him through on his own. But the point is, this one calf just kept running to the east. Wouldn't go through the gate. 2 of them went through, 3 of them went through. And I had calves on both sides right there at the gate. But this one just kept going to the east and mooing. Come follow me. Come follow me. I'm going to save myself. I want you to come. They wanted the herd, but they wanted the herd to follow them. And they didn't want to go where they needed to go. They had enough gregarious instinct to think, well, I want one other calf with me. I want somebody to come with me. But I don't want to be a part of the whole herd. And you see, and that's what Israel was. It was a whole herd. You didn't just care about the few people in your congregation, in your little group, in your little family. You cared about the next group as much as you cared about your own group. That's the requirement to complete the pattern. You have to care about your neighbor and your neighboring group and your neighboring group of groups as much as you care about yourself. So when there's danger, you don't run apart. You run together. You come together. You're not afraid to come together. You're willing to lose a little bit of your freedom and give it up. Freely receive and freely give. But people have these weeds in their heart. And they want to follow their own. I must be free. I must be free. So they're running to a pasture that is barren instead of to the pasture that's lush and green. Because they value their freedom more than they value their neighbor's well-being and freedom. They didn't stick with the herd. They didn't stick with the nation of God. They separated themselves out. They ran off. And they wanted others to come and join them because they wanted to have somebody around them. But they only wanted it because that natural inclination to have, you know, not to be totally isolated. And I see this with congregations. They get their own little congregation and they start forgetting about the other congregations. They need to be petted in order to think about others because they're still got that weed, that demon of thinking about themselves a little bit more than they think about their neighbor. And they have to repent of that. And they cannot do it on their own. So the only way that they do it is they have to start investing in their neighbor. You see, the cows stuck together pretty good. Calves just been sucking on the tit and eating grass since early spring when they were born. They haven't matured. They haven't learned the ways of meat. They still only know the ways of milk. They're selfish little critters. And they want to save themselves. And their mother probably hasn't imparted to them. You know, I've told this before where cows, you know, there'll be a cow that moves to its calf and it won't go to its calf. It'll move to its calf. It knows where its calf is at. And it'll move to its calf. It makes its calf come to it. That's a good thing. The cow that moves, where's my calf, where's my calf, finally sees its calf or hears its calf because the calf moves back and the cow runs to its calf, that's a bad thing. Yep, that's a bad thing. Because that calf will rule that cow. When the calf wants to go somewhere, it will go there and it will call the mother. That's not strengthening the herd. And the cows know this. Some cows know this. Cows like that are never picked as babysitters. The herd knows. I don't know how they figure this out. I don't know. They're having political party meetings at night. But somehow or other, they just know. They don't know a lot, but they know how to work together as a herd. And we don't lose calves to coyotes as much as other people do. Occasionally, that may take place, but not very often. I've actually come down and just suddenly was inspired to go looking for a cow in the middle of winter. And I jumped off the hay truck and, you know, I was feeding the cows and I didn't know that there was a cow missing, but I got this feeling to go over in this particular direction and I went there and I came across these tracks in the snow. And I followed the tracks and just kept trotting along, running behind the tracks and, you know, following them. And I came over a ridge and there the cow was down a hill in a gully. And she had been going around and around and around. And she was having a calf. And that calf had just been born. It was just on the ground, still wet. And she'd been going around and around, which they'll do sometimes. But there was a lot more. And when I got down to where she was, she was kind of skittish. You know, and you have to be careful because they'll go on the prod. when they have a calf. She was really skittish. And why? Because going around and around a few feet away from her were coyote tracks. There was a whole pack of coyotes there, probably seconds before I came over the rise. They heard me crunching through the snow and took off when they heard me coming near. But the shepherd came, and the coyotes fled. And the cow, I went back to the truck and got some hay. She won't want to take her calf back to the herd. She wants to make sure that calf knows her and can find her. That's why she kind of goes off. The coyotes knew it. They were going to eat her. But the shepherd knew there was something up, and the shepherd came, and the coyotes fled. And so then I went and got hay and carried it over to her and threw it down by her calf. And she settled down and eventually brought her calf up to the rest of the herd. And the coyotes didn't come around. And sometime I'll tell you some of the tricks I used to keep the coyotes away. But that's because I know the lessons these animals have to teach. But there are some animals that won't learn those lessons. Your journey towards the kingdom is yours. You have to care about others as much as you care about yourself. You have to get the weeds out of your own heart, and your own garden, and the demons out of your own mind and thinking. And you do this by freely receiving, freely giving. You have to start going through the act of caring for one another. Start becoming the social welfare of the people, for the people, and by the people. Start investing in one another. Start finding the lost sheep, finding the sheep where the coyotes are all around them, or the cattle where the coyotes are going to try to eat out their young. I just saw that, you know, the people sharing posts about their own journey, and that's great that they're on their own journey. But we are on a journey alone, together. You need to come together. So anyway, we had this article on cannabis that I just put up. And the reason that you have a government that says whether or not you can have these, you know, cannabis. George Washington wanted everybody to grow hemp. He grew hemp because it made rope, and rope was an essential part of the Navy and an essential part of farming. Can never have enough rope. And it also could produce firewood and food, and it also produced a tobacco that they sometimes call the wacky tobacco. You know, marijuana. Depending on what strain, there's lots of different strains of this cannabis. Well, they found out that cannabis not only can help alleviate pain when someone's in severe pain, and they've actually got evidence that it helps treat cancers when you extract the oil. Smoking isn't enough, but when you extract the oil. We also know that it doesn't necessarily need the elements of cannabis that make you high, because all cannabis doesn't make a person high. There's only a certain THC, that will make you high, which is tetrahydrocannabinol. They call it THC. And all THC is not the same. That has to do, hydro has to do with the amount of hydrogen atoms in these compounds, whether it's a single or not. But anyway, without going into all the technical details, and we have that on our article at Preparing You, but we go into a lot of the things, the idea of getting high. Why do you want to get high? Because actually, if you want to get high, you will be brought low. What the chemicals in, and there are lots of chemicals in cannabis that are some of, you know, there's over 60 cannabinoids in that they know of. And, you know, there's CBD and CBC and lots of different compounds of these. But what they do is they will help make connections between dendrites in your mind. There's a thing called a dendrite tree. that is created in your mind, in your brain, which has these dendrites, and there are synapses, spaces, and this is used to create communication in your brain. And some of the chemicals your brain normally uses to complete these communicating connections is serotonin, epinephrine, and dopamine. There are others, but these are basics. And these are a part of how you think. Your brain is the screen upon which you project your thoughts. And your thoughts are a product of your spirit, or whatever spirit has gotten into you. Because spirits can get into you and influence your thoughts. They can give you bad thoughts and what you call bad thoughts. And they can tell you that certain bad thoughts are good, and then you think bad thoughts are good, and they can deorganize or reorganize your brain to think in a particular way, so that you could actually think that praying to men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority is approved of God. You can actually organize your brain to think that that's okay. And it's actually making you unconscious of the ways of God. But your brain has been organized in that fashion. See, when you're a little two-year-old child, you have more dendrite connections in your big head than you have in your whole body, and that you'll have anywhere else in the history of your existence. When you're about 2 years old, after that, the dendrite connections start decreasing. But you need those large amount of connections because you're learning language, you're learning to walk. And as you learn language and how to walk and how to do things, you're organizing your brain. And that's why, you know, alcohol syndrome, you know, when a woman drinks alcohol when she's producing a child in her womb, that she can affect the brain and the damage the brain. If she's smoking marijuana during that period, she can damage that child's brain because that marijuana gets into the blood. And they may never recover from that because of the fact that this is happening while they're developing the brain. This is why Ritalin is so bad. Because during the time when the child should be organizing its brain for the process of thinking and planning and functioning, something is interfering. And we'll talk about how that's interfering with the development of the child's brain and your brain when we return to Keys of the Kingdom.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom, and we're talking about the development of the brain and how the brain works. And the brain works with these all these little connections in there and they begin to organize, like weaving a cloth, and they call it a dendrite tree. And how that brain organizes itself at a very early age will set the pattern for the life of the individual. It will set, I should say, a pattern. I mean, recently in the news, there was a story of a 24-year-old woman who came in complaining about certain issues, and they finally did a scan of her head to see if there was a problem in there, and, problem with her brain, and the problem was she didn't have a brain. Her entire cerebellum was missing. It's just gone. It's not there. And she was, she needed a little assistance in walking, but she could, talk. And she was slow in developing this, but the brain adapted without the cerebellum. And from a very early age, it adapted. Something in her allowed her to come and make these adaptations so that she could still function. She was impaired, but she was still functioning, even without a brain. And they thought this was absolutely, they thought it was impossible. And they thought it was absolutely amazing that without a brain, she was able to function as well as she was. I thought, well, they should have, that's not a surprise. I mean, have you been to Washington, D.C.? That's my little joke there, little humor. But they function without a brain. Well, they have a brain, but their patterns, there's parts of their brain they don't use. And there's parts of their brain you probably don't use. And that's why there's what we call cognitive dissonance, why you can't see certain things. Because you've been trained not to think in certain ways. And evil has had a great deal of influence to do this, and it has done this in societies from the beginning. They did it in Sodom and Gomorrah. They did it in Babylon. They did it in ancient Egypt. They did it in Rome. And they do it in your cities. They get the people to think a particular way. And that's why repentance is changing the way you think. But how do you know how to change the way you think? You don't know how to change it. I mean, are you the creator? But the creator knows and can show you, and he's given you patterns in the Bible on how to change the way you think. You change the way you do things. How do you take care of the widows and orphans of your society, the needy of your society, the lost sheep of your society? How do you deal with that? How do you gather together? And we just talked a great deal about cows, and we can talk about sheep. And we can apply those principles to yourselves. Is your charity a charity that strengthens the poor? Is it a charity, when somebody has a need, do you run to them and provide them with what they need? Or do you make them reach out? Ask and you shall receive. Look like a bum and you won't receive. You need to ask. You need to have the humility to ask. You also need to have the character to care about others. So the first thing you want to do to the poor is getting the poor to help others, including themselves. You got to help one another. You have to gather together with one another with the intention of helping, not of just, well, I'll go down to the shelter because they're always giving away food. You go down to the shelter. Don't give food to everybody that comes to the shelter. Give food to those who come to the shelter to help others. Now, occasionally you need to help people get on their feet so they can help others. But if you don't see that spirit, say, have a nice day. You can go now. You're on your feet. Don't come back, please. Because you don't want to help others. We only want people here that want to help others. Now, we understand that you may have a diminished capacity, but you need to help with what God has given you. You only got one talent, use that talent. If you don't use it, you're cast out. And what you have will be taken away from you and should be taken away from you. And if it's taken away from you by God, why am I giving it to you? I shouldn't be doing that. The Faith Emergency Ministry Auxiliary should be helping people who want to live by faith. So anyway, back to weeds. There are no weeds in the garden of God. Everything has a purpose. A weed is something just like, you know, a dumb animal is an animal that just outsmarted you. A weed is an animal that or a creature, a fauna that you haven't figured out what it's good for. Most of what we call weeds today are there to replenish the soil. And when the soil is replenished, it will grow a better garden. Now, we could go through a lot of those weeds, but I'm not really giving you a course on horticulture. You have to get the weeds out of your thinking. And you need some weeds in your thinking. Now, that's why they're there. And how do you get rid of, do you pull up the weeds? No, you change the environment. You know, the if you see foxtail in your field, it's telling you that the soil is missing something. Foxtail will grow where the soil is missing something. You have Canadian thistle, they're telling you that you're overgrazing. These are barometers, they're telling you. So if you have selfishness, if people are being selfish with you, it's because you have selfishness. You have to change your thinking. So Christ says, you know, not forsake the coming together and gather together and take care of one another. Love one another. This is how you get to be loved. People who need love are not the luckiest people in the world. It's the people who love others. And so you have to love others in order to be loved by God. Now, God loves you, but he's going to chastise you if you don't come together and help one another. The nation of God came together to help one another, to be there for one another. And there's ways in which you do this. So when you gather in a congregation, does that mean everybody in the congregation has to think the way you do? Everybody in the congregation has to say things the way you do? Everybody in the congregation needs to be moving in the direction of the kingdom of God and the ways of God. And you need to find out what those are. You need to ponder that. And now back to the brain. The brain is the screen upon which you ponder that. That's where your conscious mind rests and organizes itself in this world. It's where your spirit etches out the pattern of your being. So what happens when you get high? Chemicals that are not produced in your body that normally could be produced in your body to complete those connections between the dendrites and the communication to other cells are now supplanted by THC. You know, people think that the oils are curing cancer. The oils are completing connections that are not being made properly in your own body. You know, it's like vaccines. Do vaccines cure disease? Vaccines stimulate your body, your immune system, to protect your body. You're the one who's protecting from the disease. Which is interesting about AIDS. AIDS is a disease of the immune system. Everybody with AIDS, there are zero cures. The number of people that have died from AIDS increases, but there are zero cures. Why? A very fundamental disease. You need to keep all the connections you can get. You need to find out. If you're sick, you need to find out why you're sick. What connections are not being made that should be being made to help you? Now, you may be drowning in your disease. It may be killing you. Pain may be killing you and destroying your body, like the little girl in Charlotte's Web, not in the movie, but the new, there's a new strain of cannabis called Charlotte's Web. And it's because there was a girl having hundreds of seizures. I mean, hundreds. It was killing her. These serious brainstorm seizures. And they discovered that using a certain oils from a certain crossing of cannabis plants, that she went from hundreds to only a few of these seizures rapidly, instantaneously. MS patients can be helped with the oils. Parkinson's disease patients can be helped with oils. These are all mental disorders where signals, you know, somebody told me that Parkinson's patients do not shake when they're asleep. I don't know if that's true, but that's very interesting. Because when you're asleep, certain signals in your brain are cut off. You become immobile. It immobilizes you so that you don't hurt yourself when you have dreams in your sleep. Although sometimes people fluctuate in this state of consciousness where they're still kind of sleeping but walking. And I suppose when they're walking now, the question is, when they're walking in their sleep, are they shaking? But anyway, what the marijuana does, the oils, I don't like to use the word marijuana because you don't necessarily need to smoke it, although that can show some immediate relief. You need the oils and it stops the shaking. Why is it doing that? It's because it's interrupting the signals. And that's what happens with when it's supposedly curing cancer. It's not curing cancer. It's completing signals in the cells. And the cells that are should be receiving a signal to destroy the cancer cell, turn it off so that it starves itself, is not being completed. And the oils help that complete the signal. Same thing with some of the other aromatic oils that you can use with children who have scoliosis and their spine is crooked. It's their muscles that are bending the spine so that it's crooked. When you put certain oils on the back of this child and on their feet so that the oils will penetrate that sheath and go up there, they're literally reaming out the signals. So now the signals become balanced and the child's spine begins to straighten itself out. The oils are not straightening out the spine, and the oils from cannabis and other oils as well that can help with the healing of cancer. I said didn't cure it. The healing, because it's the body that heals you, is helping complete that signal. Well, the same thing that can help complete that signal can interfere with that signal, which is why if people are smoking, and most people only want to smoke the marijuana that makes them high, when they're smoking that and getting high, what is taking place? What is actually going on in that person's mind? And what are the results? And they're well documented. Short-term memory loss, disorientation as far as, you know, the passage of time. You can become disinterested in, you know, like the fellow who was smoking a lot of marijuana as he was raising his kids. He would just rationalize, well, I don't need to go to that. They don't need me there. And he neglected his kids. And he realized that it was changing the way he was organizing his life. He was making decisions, financial decisions. Money ran through his hands while he was smoking. He couldn't save money. Didn't think it was important. And that's one of the symptoms, that they didn't think it was important. He didn't think it was important to be there for his kids. He didn't think it was important to make sure that his kids were doing well. He thought, well, that's okay. It's not, his priorities were affected because it changed the way he organized his life. It affects a part of your brain that you use to plan, organize, solve problems, make decisions, and control impulses. You can still function. Part of your brain is gone. It's interrupted by a chemical. And that's why a lot of times people say, well, it enhances my ability to concentrate. It's just simply because it shut down everything else. You know, not everything, but a large portion of your brain, it's shutting down. The operation of those dendrites is is being supplanted by the THC. So you're not using it. And you can still function, just like this woman without a brain at all, not cerebellum at all. She was still functioning. Not as well as she could, but she was still getting by. They couldn't believe that she was even walking and talking at all. But she was. She was still functioning. But she was born without a brain. When you're smoking, you're shutting down part of your brain. And you may need to do that in order to maybe go to sleep, to relax. But a question should arise. Why do I have to physically shut down part of my brain in order to go to sleep? You have a disorder. MS is a disorder. Parkinson's is a disorder. I would not want to deprive people of the immediate relief that, you know, using these alternate substances or medicines or whatever you want to call it may supply. But I want you to be aware that there is a problem and there is probably another solution. I know of people who have had Parkinson's who had miraculous changes because they actually searched their own heart for unforgiveness. And they weren't bad people. And the people they had to forgive, they couldn't even remember the events of their unforgiveness because it happened way back when they were like 2 and I think 7. Somebody died and they had a feeling of abandonment. They didn't, you know, in their conscious mind, they didn't, you know, hold a grudge. But deep down inside, they had set up a pattern of resentment, which is what unforgiveness is. Judgment, because somebody was there and then they weren't. They know that the person didn't really abandon them. They just died. But yet that unforgiveness was there. And when they came to grips with that, there was a miraculous physical change in their body. Now, there's no end to that, those changes. Christ was forgiving people, pounding nails into his body. He was forgiving them the scourges and the cruelties and the spittle. He was forgiving them. If I spit on you, would you forgive me instantly? If I hit you with a stick, would you forgive me? If I judged you, would you forgive me? Christ's forgiveness allowed him to rise from the dead. Your forgiveness can give you life. But forgiveness is one part of it. You must also give. Give life to others. You have life. Freely receive, freely give. People think, well, if I do this and I'm only hurting myself, I'm not hurting anybody else, I should be allowed to do it. And you should be allowed to do it. But you sin against everybody when you hurt yourself. You're a part of society. You were put here. It's like burying your talent. Christ told you, you have a talent. You have skills. You have abilities. Even if you're born without a brain at all, you can still adjust and do what you can with what you have, and you can go from one talent to 2 talents to 3 talents. But if you bury your talent, if you don't use your talent, if you turn your back on your talent, and I know this is, you know, there's no line in the sand. I mean, there are many lines in the sand that we make these choices. This is why coming together is not, the reason you come together is not for what you can get. It's what you can give, because it's only in freely giving that you will receive more. You're spiritually constipated because you're not giving enough of yourself to others. But when you give, you must also give wisely in a way that strengthens the poor. I've helped my young kids now with my grandkids. If they have to carry something, I won't take it out of their hands. I will support, you know, if it's really heavy, you know, like they want to carry a bucket. I will actually take the bucket and lift some of the weight off of them. I have to bend over and put my back in jeopardy to help them lift that bucket. But I don't want to take it out of their hands. I want them to feel like they're a part and somebody's just helping them. Just like that cow that calls her calf. Now, when she first notices her calf is missing, she might move around and look. You know, some of them are a lot cooler about it than that. But then when she spots the calf, she'll call that calf and make that calf come to her. Why? So the calf will learn to come to the herd. Because when the calf is alone, she doesn't want her just to go to one cow. She wants her to come to the herd. Now, when it's first born, she wants to graft that calf to her. So she takes the calf, she goes out away from the herd a little ways and gives birth, tries to find an isolated place and gives birth. And then you can tell when a sheep's about the lamb, is it'll be onto the outskirts of the herd, trying to find an isolated place because it wants that lamb to graft directly to it. Then she'll bring it back to the herd. And then she wants to graft it to the herd. And that's why you should homeschool your children. But then you should bring your children together so that they start to learn to take care. What should be your school activities? Taking care of one another. Taking care of the strangers in your midst. Go out, and this is what your church... You want to have a church meeting? Don't go to a building and sing songs and, you know, and have a potluck where you all stuff your face. Go out and try to help the needy. Go down the street, you know, and try to find where God wants you to do something for somebody else. In the movie Unbreakable, I don't know if you've seen that, as a Night Shyamalan's movie, you know, he finally is realizing that he has a talent. And he goes to the train station and he just puts out his hands and he knows that if he touches somebody, he will get flashes of what's going on in that person's life. You have those talents. And you can go out and help other people and touch their lives in a way that strengthens them. It's not enough just to give. You have to give in a way that strengthens the poor. And there are so many different aspects of that, I can't talk about them all. You have to come together with other people. And in that interaction of giving and forgiving each other, you become a herd, a body, first in the congregants, in a free assembly, but then in a free assembly of free assemblies. And then you become that nation of God, that kingdom of God, where people are caring for one another, taking care of one another, exchanging information. You become a part of the mind of Christ. Each one of you is a part of that dendrite tree of the mind of Christ. A connection. But you need to make that connection with one another. You need to actually have an exchange. Give a little bit here and there in a way that strengthens. And learn how to give, when to give. Follow the leading of the Spirit in this. And you will find the keys to the kingdom. Until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.